So I want to start with a practical point. Right now we are scheduled to end on, I'm not sure. Let's see. The date would be March 25th. And then there's a practice session scheduled for April 8th. Now, there's two issues with the practice session. One is that it turns out I have another commitment. And the other is that it's Easter, so it may not be that easy for everybody anyway. So I would like to change the practice session to the following week, which is April 15th. So that would be the time we have our phone call, and the day before, really, April 14th, is when we would be the actual practice day. So Kathleen, can you send out a notice about that? But I'm letting people know now so that you can start thinking about it.
We better start our taxes now.
Yeah, sure. Well, practice once it starts never stops. That's the thing about TSK. But so that's the main thing I wanted to point out. And then the other thing about March 25th, it turns out actually that on the March 25th, I'm going to be in England, and I will be leading a TSK workshop that ends at exactly the moment that this session is supposed to begin. So I think we will. I'll try to find out exactly what the internet options are in England where I'll be. We can go ahead and do it, but I think we'll start perhaps half an hour later, something like that. So I'll let you know more about that. But so there'll be just a little bit of an adjustment on March 25th, and a change in the practice day from April 8th to April 15th, or the practice day phone call. Okay, those are the practical issues. So let's get started on this chapter. In one way, I had the feeling when I was reading this that Rinpoche is really making things very clear, extremely clear. It's not absolutely clear how we respond or how we integrate that understanding. That's the challenge, you could say. But it does seem to me that this is very, I don't know what I can say besides clear. It's just he's really laying out how it is that our ordinary understanding involves a certain limitation, and beyond that, it's possible to open up into a different kind of knowledgeability. In the last reading, he called that the body of knowledge, and I'm going to be coming back to that term a little today. But he describes it in various ways at various times. I think that really, in one way, you could say, well, this is kind of crazy, all this stuff he's talking about. He's talking about flattening space. What could that possibly mean? And he says, we have no point of access to really understanding what that means. And he's talking about a world that is less than zero, zero-less. And again, you could say we have no point of access to that. And then he's talking about this inward-outward knowing, which I wouldn't say that we have no access to that, but if you just take literally what the words mean, you might say, well, that doesn't make any sense. How can it be inward and outward at the same time? So at a certain level, you say, well, how can I possibly make sense of this? And I hope, if people are feeling discouraged at that level, saying, well, I don't get this, I don't make sense of it, I can't make sense of it, please, bring it up on the web, or bring it up in our class would be even better, and we can discuss it. Maybe find some way to express your concern. But my own sense in reading it is that it really was is I extremely clear in saying we have this ordinary way of understanding our situation and understanding space in that circumstance, and we can just change it. Or there is the possibility, at least, of changing it. So that's my basic take on what we're doing. And the question is going to be to try to clarify what that actually how that actually works in practice. And I suppose the first thing to do, the first thing I want to do, is just make clear that we are we're following along a line that Rinpoche has already laid out in the previous chapter. You know, when he talked about ekgnosis, when he talked about inward outward knowing, we could even go a little bit further back at the beginning of chapter 4, which I guess we read at the end of the last program. He uses a phrase that he repeats almost word for word in this chapter, and that phrase is the persistent claims of substance. No, wait a second. I'm sorry, that's not the phrase. I guess I better find it. Wait one moment. Universal claims. Da, 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 da. Well, I can't find it, then that's not worth spending much time on. It has to do, I guess it does have to do with the universal claims of substance. Let me just look back at the beginning of chapter 4. Sorry for that little click. That was my holder. Okay, here's what it is. It's the phrase at the bottom of page 29 says, what we can never do with our ordinary form bodies or know with minds intent on form. In other words, as long as we're committed to our ordinary understanding of space, which gives us forms in space and substance in space, as long as we're committed to that, there's a knowledge that's not available to us. And it says, but we can readily do and know that in the no-body space of universal knowledgeability. So that's the phrase I was looking at, because he does repeat it on page 42 at the end of the first paragraph. He takes out the word universal, but he says the no-body space of knowledgeability. So that's the place that Rinpoche is pointing towards. I shouldn't really say pointing, because he often makes the observation that you know, it's not a question of points. It's more a question of this inward-outward knowing, this zeroless body of knowledge, you could say. You know, we're kind of deep into a TSK jargon, and I don't want to go too far in that direction, or I don't want you to think that you have to start describing your experience to yourself in that way. These are all images, and this whole notion that Rinpoche starts with in this chapter of flattening space, it's an image for the possibility of a different way of experiencing. I don't think it's a practice. You know, it's not as though we try to figure out what it means, or try to figure out what it's like to live in flattened space. As Rinpoche says, and this is on page 43, a couple of lines before the heading, he says, he's talking about time here, but he says the moment before time is simply mysterious. It offers us no point of access. We could consider the flattened zeroless realm in somewhat the same manner. It offers us no point of access. Now, that may not be the final word. Sometimes Rinpoche will say, I can't. You know, we can't imagine what this would mean, and then he tries to lead us toward imagining it. But in this case, I think that.
Well, Jack,
Yes.
I think it points to the opposite. I think it points to how important how space supports appearance.
Yes, I think that's true.
It points to the supportive nature of space, in terms of
Okay.
supporting.
So why do you call that the opposite?
Well, it's the opposite of being flattened. I couldn't imagine
Ah.
the flattened.
Right.
Once I was trying to wrestle with the flattened, what
Right.
I got was how supportive space is.
Okay. Okay, good. Well, I think that's fine, and that may be, in fact, closer on the experiential level. So we should look at this question of, what does it mean to talk about flattened space? Because, as I said in the orientation, and as Rinpoche says in the chapter, it sounds like if you flatten something, there's less, less support, you could say, or there's less to it. You've lost a dimension. So one way to think about that is in terms of information, which is a kind of lower level version, it seems to me, of knowledge or knowledgeability. You could say that, if you have a three-dimensional object, and then you flatten it, you lose a dimension, clearly, and in terms of knowledge, you lose some information because you don't know what that object would look like. You could kind of imagine it, but you don't really know what the object would look like if you took it back into three dimensions. So if you look at a painting, it's very it reveals a great deal, but it's missing that third dimension. It doesn't convey that level of information. So why does Rinpoche talk about flattening space? Why is he offering this particular image for what we're doing? And the answer, I mean, the image may not work for you, that's fine, but it's definitely not suggesting that there's something less. He says that very clearly on the top of page 43. It's not that we're left with less than we had before. And this is where he gives that example about time. He says if you ran time backwards to the moment of the Big Bang, if you think about it that way, and then you ask what's before the Big Bang, and you don't need to have an answer to that question, but what that analogy is supposed to help us see is that what's going on before the Big Bang is not necessarily less than what's going on after the Big Bang. It's just inaccessible. Right? And the same thing is true if you flatten space, or if you have a kind of a space that is less than zero or zeroless. He doesn't really say that space is zeroless, although he probably does somewhere. But here in this discussion on page 42, he's talking about a point, and he says that since a point is already defined as something that occupies zero dimensions, if you flatten each point in space, or if you flatten space, you flatten each point in space, and that means that the point becomes less than zero. And that's where the notion of zeroless comes from. But this is all images and depending on a kind of play of language, as I say, we're not, our experience is going to have more to do with support, as Hayward says, and what I would say is that our experience is going to have more to do with embodiment. And that's really where I want to talk about the body of knowledge, which is something that Rinpoche brought up in on page 40, in the reading for last week. He talks about two things he talks about. One is, let's go back there for a moment. At the bottom of the page, the last paragraph, he says he's talking about knowledge as ekgnosis, and that was the theme for the last reading. So he says knowledge is ekgnosis, radiating outward from the inward heart of space. And then the next sentence, he says, it discovers within and beyond each limit an aura of knowledgeability, the radiant, luminous body of knowledge. I don't think that when Rinpoche talks here about zeroless, that he has left that idea behind. In fact, I feel pretty confident about that. Zeroless space is the support for the body of knowledge. And we need to kind of figure out, it's a paradox, sounds like a paradox, especially if we think in terms of flattening, and we say, well, if you take a body let's say you take a living body and you flatten it, then it's probably not living anymore, right? That's what people do with bugs sometimes. That's not what he's talking about. And he makes it very clear. We're not flattening the objects in space. We're flattening space itself. And in a sense, maybe what you could say is, we have this ordinary understanding of space, and we would like to get rid of it. That's not such a nice word. We would like to do more than that. And one way to do that is to say, well, take the ordinary dimensionality of space and flatten that. And now what happened to space? It's not what we thought it was. Is it gone? Well, no. And that's where we get this notion of the luminous body of knowledge and also the heart of space. So David has a note here in the chat. He says, this, I guess, is a plane geometry model of seeing into an experience of zeroless. Yeah, I think that's right, although you'd have to ask, what does that mean? What's the relationship between that plane geometry and our ordinary experience? Maybe that's helpful, though, to think in those terms. I think we've talked in the past in other courses about this book, Flatland, that was written about a century ago or more now, that talks about, what it would be like if a creature, a being that lived in two dimensions, came in contact with a being that lives in three dimensions. It would be a little bit like actually flattening. Maybe that's actually a helpful thing to think about. Three dimensions is, to our way of thinking, we'd say, well, that's more than two dimensions. But for a creature in two dimensions, in order to even get a sense of what a third dimension is like, maybe you'd have to flatten your two dimensions. I'm not sure that's right. And I don't want to worry about it too much. That is, as I said, if the image of flattening doesn't work for you, that's okay. The image of the zeroless in some ways is more important, and this is how Rinpoche gets at it. So what I want to emphasize is those two passages or phrases that I just read, the body of knowledge, he says the luminous body of knowledge, or the radiant luminous body of knowledge, and the inward heart of space. So that's the paradox. When you have to flatten space in order to arrive at the inward heart of space. And I think it's a good idea to take the idea of heart of space and luminous body of knowledge, to take those literally. Not quite literally, but what I mean by that is that in terms of our experience, the more we can embody knowledge, the more we can arrive or arrive at, because it's not so much that we're the ones who embody it, but the more that we can arrive at the body of knowledge, and the more we can discover the heart of space. And again, this is really what I mean when I say take it literally. It's the heart of space. It's not some nice image where you might just as well say the essence of space, or the true, what's another word for essence? The heart of space in some kind of abstract sense, where you say now we've gotten to the heart of the matter. No, the heart of space really in the sense that it has to do with embodiment, a kind of a living, beating heart of space, and that heart of space has to do with knowledge, right? It's when we manifest the body of knowledge that we arrive at the heart of space. That's what I think is going on here. I want us to look into that, and I think we should do that as a practice. So let's do that as a practice, and see how people, what people's experience is. And again, it's going to be one of these short practices that we do. And then afterwards, I want to go on into the next part of the chapter. We've kind of gone through half of our reading for now. So here's the practice. Start with your own embodiment. Well, okay, before we do that, I see that Michael has written something, so let's talk about that, and then we'll do the practice. He says, is flattening space something like living in the present, without expectation or regret? In both cases, the illusory extension saps the ability to be fully present. Yeah, I think that's good. I think that's a nice way to think about it. Rinpoche makes the analogy to time, and he says going to the moment before the beginning of time is like flattening space. But it's also true, this is Michael's point, that if you give up the future and the past, then you could say you're embodying time. You're embodying the present moment of time. There's more to be said about that, but that's not our main concern here. But it does seem to me that it's like that. If you think of space as being something that has these three dimensions, and it is a lot like the three dimensions of time, which are past, present, and future, right? If you think about space in that way, then you are automatically led to the kinds of things that can show up in a three-dimensional space, you know, to objects in space that take up, you know, that have height and width and depth. So you want to be able to flatten that, and then you arrive at something else. And again, the paradox is you arrive at the heart of space. You kind of strip away all this non-essential stuff, which we think is the heart, is the essence of space, right? Is that it's got three dimensions. We're very connected to this notion of physical space with its three dimensions. And he's saying, no, get rid of that, flatten that space, and then you arrive at a different space. And he does say, I'll get back to the practice in a moment, he does say, if we flatten that space, we also flatten our presence in that space. So at a certain level, we wouldn't even notice any difference, right? But at another level, we've arrived at the heart of space. So how can we look at that? Well, I think we should start from embodiment, our own embodiment. So the practice is first to start with your sense of your body. That's where embodiment starts. And then to let everything that appears share in that embodiment. In the same way we're looking last week when we looked at ekgnosis and this inward-outward knowing. In other words, there's a knowledgeability involved in it. Everything that appears is a kind of carrier of knowledge, and as such, it's embodied. You might say it's embodied as a manifestation of knowledge, as the body of knowledge. And that's true for our own embodiment. It's true for what appears around us if we look around. And it's also true for our feelings, for, you know, our images that dance through our minds, whatever they are. Just think of them as embodiments of knowledge. I guess that's the basic practice, is just to see everything as an embodiment of knowledge, so that everything that appears embodies the heart of space, which is inseparable from knowledge. Let's try that for a couple of minutes. Okay, let's come back together. So, I'll give people a chance to share some of their experience, either in speaking, yes, or in writing. Was it someone who wanted to say something? Well, okay, David has written something. The heart of space is the, this is David. The heart of space is the knowledgeability of space. After you strip away the form and objects or flatten all their points, what is left is knowledgeability. So I think that is a nice statement of where we're looking. I can get a brief or fleeting sense of this knowingness when thoughts become less insistent and I am calm. I feel or sense my own space where stuff happens. So, David, would you say that your own space is related then to what we're calling the heart of space? The same thing? That would be my question.
That's probably, I would say that that feeling might be more related to the fields of my senses.
Okay, so
and,
go ahead.
And sometimes I get a sense of that even a more or more in even a more vast space than that. Once in a great while.
Okay. Well, I do think that the place to start is embodiment in the senses. That just seems to make good sense, if you pardon the play on words. But
when I look at thoughts and I see them as forms of light, then when as thoughts occur, light appears. So there's a luminous quality intrinsic to thought, as I attribute the thought as form.
So when you say light appears, is it a physical light that your experience, or is that part of it?
In the mental imagery or mental imagination. In that way.
Okay. Well, that's certainly, you know, thoughts as images. There is a light that supports that. There's really, I think, although people never seem to take that seriously enough, it seems to me. That connection between light and thoughts is absolutely there. So, yes. So there's the knowledgeability of space. There's the kind of dissolving of points in space. And I do think that that's a way to connect up the notion of flattening space with the notion of an intrinsic knowledgeability. You know, when you look at an object in front of you, during our practice just now, I was looking at a clock that's on the wall, and I happen to like the shape of a clock, so that made it easier. But there's this distance that separates me and the clock, right? And flattening space means flattening that distance. And then, of course, it means flattening the space of the clock, the shape of the clock. You know, all of that gets flattened. And yet, there's still a knowing about the clock, you know. And I mean, actually, I can even read the time on the clock, although that's secondary. So the knowing remains, but something has disappeared or at least been questioned. So we have a couple of more comments. So Karin says, it feels like chanting, ah, there's more ease in experience. Yeah, that's nice, actually. You know, it's like one of the nice things about, this is a syllable, ah, that we use, of course, in Buddhist practice. And one of the nice things about that syllable is that it's like the syllable we use for just relaxing, when you say, like that, you know, it's just a kind of a relaxing. And so I don't want to put words in your mouth, Karin, but it's like if the shapes and the distances and all the things that give us structure, if all of that releases and relaxes, then everything relaxes. And that relaxation carries its own knowing. So that's a part of what we're looking at. Yeah. So Michael says, noticing my mind lost in a fictitious daydream, right? I returned to a quieter, more settled state. And it occurred to me that the projections of unsettled mind are like the waves on a windswept lake. Quieting thought, the surface is flatter, perhaps like space being flattened. Well, that's, I don't know. I don't know if that's like space being flattened, but it's a nice image. I don't know. I mean, it's worth exploring whether it's like space being flattened. And it does make a good point, which is that when you return from something where you're lost, you know, and so let's talk for a moment about what it means to be lost in a daydream or lost in a thought or lost in a concern or a worry or an emotion. It seems like, in a way, what you've done is you've built up a world. It's not necessarily a world which has access to the body of knowledge because you've constructed it. You know, it's kind of a second-order world. And then, when you return from that world, it's kind of like, you know, the way we might normally describe that, or one way to describe it would be to say, it's like there's this bubble that you've created, and it pops. But another way you might say it is that you flatten the dimensionality of that, right? So if you have a daydream, you know, and you imagine that you're talking to somebody somewhere in this daydream, and then that comes to an end, it's like, well, that world has been flattened. It's not there anymore. And again, that might be a nice image for what's going on. And really the point that I started to make was when you return from something like that, it's never very helpful to say, oh, I was just screwing up, you know, I was just not doing the practice because I got lost in thought. Because then you're still holding on to that thought, you're refusing to flatten it. You know, now you're holding on to it from the outside, giving it a different shape and form, but you're looking back on it and you're making it real as it can ever get, by judging it or judging yourself for having had it. Much better than when you flatten it, to really flatten it completely and let go of it completely. So maybe we're getting a little closer to the sense of what flattening means. Okay. I wanted to read just quickly the paragraph on page 44, which talks about what Rinpoche means by a zeroless world, right? And you know, this is when he's talking about appearance that's been flattened. And another way to say that is it's appearance that doesn't insist on its own substance. That's more the way he talked about it in the previous chapter. And we arrive at that understanding. One way to arrive at it is through this sense of ekgnosis, of an inward-outward knowing, which is really the foundation for knowing rather than the substance of what it is we think we know. Okay, so he says, he said, you know, that substance disappears, and he says that in the paragraph above the one I'm going to read, so I guess I'm going to read this one too, or part of it. He says, appearance would be freed from the persistent claims of substance. It would become zeroless. So then he says, so what is a zeroless? What is the zeroless, anyway? He says, a zeroless world would offer neither blockage, restrictions, nor borders. In the interacting of appearance, there would be no occupancy or possession, and hence no interruption, which is an interesting thought that we can't go into right now. There would be no point at the center, and no point that encompasses the whole. No structure that would support such distinctions as center and periphery. There would be no properties to be owned and no structures founded on ownership. We might say that the edge opened into fullness, but this would not be because something had been filled in. Rather, fullness and openness would be inseparable, present from the outset, without having to be called forth or evoked. And then he says in the next paragraph, I'll just read two sentences from that. He says, one shape, in our ordinary understanding, he says, one shape closes off a particular space, leaving the rest outside that space. But when dimensionality is flattened, nothing is excluded. That's really where we're going. And then he uses this image, which I've never really liked so much, but this time I actually thought it was a great image. In zeroless space, dimensions open up as though unzipped. And the way I guess I thought of it more literally this time. If you imagine that in every instant of appearance, in every substance or thing that we encounter, there's a kind of a hidden zipper, you know, that imagine that the zipper's on the bottom, kind of, so you don't see it. So then you unzip it, and you open up into space. You know, it's just gone. Just you know, the claim that the thing is what it is, you zip that open, and then you're back in space. So there's that sense. Okay. So the theme that we've looked at, or what the way that I've tried to suggest we can get into this practice, is embodiment. What I'm going to do in the orientation for this coming week is suggest a couple of practices. One of them is a practice from dynamics, and the other one is just something to try in your ordinary experience that has to do with your interactions with people. But I won't try to describe that now because we're at the end of our time. I'll just put that in the orientation. Just in case somebody doesn't get a chance to look at the material on the website, I'll tell you that the practice I have in mind from Body of Knowledge, excuse me, from Dynamics of Time and Space, is it's exercise 5 on page 262. And I'll say a little bit about that in the orientation. So there we are for today. I hope people are finding this fruitful. And we'll meet again next week.